Get started again. So, I'll just draw your attention to the problem of the day. I think I have it posted for last week with the notes. We'll solve it next time after you've had a chance to have a look at it. And I'm on the wrong page of it. There we go. Okay. So, we have a mobile network with a required signal interference ratio. We have determined the level at which power drops for the signal, factor of 4. And we have a fixed, we have 126 channels. Okay. So, the first thing we do here is calculate the reuse factor for our system. We start with omnidirectional antennas, and then we look at sectorization into 120 degrees, so split the thing into thirds, or 60 degrees, split the cell into sixths. Okay. And so what we've seen is that the signal to interference ratio will differ for each of these cases. Or how you calculate it will differ for each of these cases, and that will affect the reuse factor. And so, but we will also, for the sectorization, be splitting our cell into smaller channel sets. So that, again, will just give us the basic layout of the system. If we choose one of these three options, and then we can use the techniques that we looked at today, the traffic engineering techniques, to determine what the trunking efficiency is in each of the three cases. Okay. And so you have, so you can see basically how many users can be accommodated depending on which of the three design choices you make. And then you can think about what the trade-offs are for using all of the different options. So again, we won't solve that today. We'll solve it. Won't solve it next week either. We'll solve it in two weeks' time when we meet again. So, let me just see what's happening here. Sure. Our next topic is cellular networks, and what we're going to do for the next little while is look at sort of how some details of how cellular networks are designed and how they've sort of evolved with time. And we are going to use GSM as sort of our baseline for where we start. One place to get an overview for this would be the John Skourios tutorial. And Actually, Erickson has a nice tutorial as well, which I'll give you a pointer to in Moodle. So we're going to start by looking at a bit of a timeline for cellular systems. And so they started out providing sort of analog voice connectivity, and now they're moving on to providing digital high bit rate connectivity, potentially across multiple networks, multiple interfaces, etc. And so that will just sort of give us a sort of an idea of where this is all going. Then we'll look at some of the details of GSM, since it's still out there, or evolved, the evolved forms of it are still out there, and you can find a reasonable amount of material on GSM and all the various aspects of GSM. And at some level, the sort of basic approach to how things are done hasn't changed that much. A lot of the details have changed, certainly, but sort of some of the fundamental aspects are the same. Okay. So, cellular networks are classified into generations, where first generation networks were designed to offer analog voice service, and these sort of were first built, demonstrated, and built in the late 70s, early 80s. Okay. And naturally, there was not just one standard, but pretty much every country or group of countries came up with their own standards. Okay, so the equipment associated with them was limited in region because of the different standards, which sort of had market implications, and the analog nature of the systems limited their capacity. Okay. But still, by the 90s, there were around 20 million subscribers worldwide. Okay. Second generation cellular networks moved to digital signaling. Okay. And this had the benefits of supporting data services such as fax, SMS, file transmission, and also improving the transmission quality, system capacity, and coverage. The basic orientation of these systems was still towards voice connectivity and a circuit-switched system, so allocating of resources in pretty much a circuit-switched capacity. Okay. So, 2G technologies were classified according to the multiplexing techniques used. Majority were
time division, multiple access.
So similar to the wired telephony networks, but code division, multiple access, so using spread spectrum systems appeared for the first time as well. And there were still quite a few standards used in various parts of the world. Okay. Now, GSM was the dominant standard for the 2G world. So in 2006, it was 82% of the global market, and with upwards of 2 billion customers. And indeed today, it's still GSM, and sort of the evolution of GSM still has a very large portion of the market. Okay. It's so again, the digital allowed for better call quality, sort of lower cost, and the sort of dominance allowed for, well, again, sort of pricing and also roaming, so you could go wherever the systems were used. Okay. And again, we're going to look at more details of GSM later in the lecture. It's anything to do with telephony is sort of all details, and lots of acronyms, so we'll try and keep it at a fairly understandable level, but it is a lot of details. Okay. Now, 3G systems had a goal of supporting IP packet-based traffic better and at higher data rates. And so the goals for 3G systems, or sort of moving towards 3G systems, were worldwide usage, support for, again, packet applications as well as voice, higher data rates and higher spectrum efficiency. So, a number of systems were proposed and implemented, which moved towards those capabilities, and typically were based on the 2G, or sort of evolutions of the 2G systems. GPRS and Edge, we'll see, were evolutions of GSM systems. CDMA 2000 would be an evolution of the US-based CDMA system. So there were a lot of problems with 3G uptake, although I probably should have updated this slide. It's certainly getting there. A lot of them had to do with the licensing of spectrum. 3G was designed to, or was allocated to run in a different frequency spectrum than 2G. And so you may or may not have followed all of the sort of licensing auctions that went on around allocating that spectrum, but the price paid for licenses tended to hinder the actual rollout of the systems.
But it is making progress, and so, you know, again, I probably should update the slide at some point, then those numbers are higher. It was very successful in Japan, again, because it was offered at low tariffs, so it was offered at a reasonable price to the consumer. The specification for 3G systems is referred to as IMT-2000. And again, it had these goals, specific throughput rates, so up to 2 megabits indoors or at low speeds, 384 kilobits per second at sort of car velocity or slightly higher, and lower in sort of less well-served areas. And again, there was an idea of enabling roaming over different jurisdictions. The service should be independent of the radio interface technology, so you can have a phone which will have multiple radio interfaces, and you know, again, that's typical of phones today. Yeah. And switching between fixed and wireless communications, support for both circuit and packet switch services, and support for multimedia and real-time services, so giving some quality of service. Okay. So, ITU set up IMT-2000 to agree these standards and to certify the standards, and the main 3G standards are UMTS, which was proposed by the Third Generation Partnership Project, or, and again, that's can be viewed as an evolution from GSM, or again, CDMA 2000, which was proposed by 3GPP2. Okay, and as an evolution from the CDMA system. Okay. And we're now looking forward to 4G systems, which have even higher data rates. Handovers between heterogeneous networks, so you can switch from from sort of a wireless LAN to a cellular network, etc., depending on sort of access, roaming across multiple networks, quality of service supports, and all IP service. Okay, so get away from the connection-oriented altogether. Okay. And ITU set up IMT Advanced to define these requirements, and within that, 3GPP has proposed the LTE Advanced standard. Okay. So, you know, just 3G networks are there. 4G is sort of an evolutionary step to some extent. Again, we're going to start back with 2G and look at some of the details of 2G. You know, again, not that sort of the specifics are necessarily exactly what goes on today, but the general principles are very similar. There's a lot of sort of literature out there which discusses GSM, And additionally, a lot of the networks can be seen as an evolution from this basic GSM network. So, again, GSM was a 2G is a 2G standard, provides a digital, primarily voice telephony, and supports some basic data transfer functions as well. Again, it's connection oriented, so the data is transmitted over connections, so fixed connections. It's the dominant standard worldwide, even still. And again, if you think about sort of in an evolutionary fashion, it's quite complex. With over 6,000 pages of standards. And again, this actually isn't terribly unusual within the telephony world, but you have to pin down every detail, and there are a lot of them. So we're going to try and sort of distill that out to a fairly high-level overview. And so the first thing to look at is the basic architecture. And so we have a number of components. We've got our mobile station, which consists of mobile equipment plus a SIM card, a subscriber identity module, so identifying a specific user. And that communicates via a radio channel with a base transceiver station, or sort of more globally with a base station subsystem. Okay. So the purpose of the base station subsystem is to manage the radio connections between any number of mobile users and the cellular network. Okay. The base station subsystems are connected then to the switching subsystem. And the purpose of the switching subsystem then is to connect our mobile users backwards into a telephone network. So either your telephone network or potentially a data network. Okay, but they provide the sort of back-end network functions that allow you to connect, again, anywhere in the world. And then we have an operations and maintenance center, which sort of maintains the subsystem, so it's worried about billing, it's worried about the performance of monitoring the performance of the systems, etc. Okay. Now, we won't say a lot about the operations and maintenance subcenter, but we'll look at the functioning of the base station subsystem and the switching subsystem and how this allows us to get our mobile connectivity. Okay. Now, before we go into the details of our subsystems, we'll say a couple of other words about
sort of details about how the systems are organized. And so again, you have your coverage is cellular, so you have cells covering an area. Okay. And so these areas can be classified according to what system within the network controls the cell, or sorry, the is responsible for managing the area. So we start with a single cell, and that has a unique identifier, and it's covered by one base station. Okay. Now, again, a location area is comprised of a number of cells, and these might have one or more base station controllers associated. They will all have a single MSC. Okay. The location area represents the paging range for the system. So if you recall, mobile units were tracked into a paging range and no further. So the location area gives you what the paging range is. A single MSC then can control or maintain more than one location area, and then the network overall, called a public land mobile network, comprises of a number of MSCs and their associated MSC areas, but is operated by a single network operator. Okay. Now, we looked at our subsystems there, and we said we have the mobile station communicates with the base station and from the base station to the base station controller, and that further communicates back to the switching subsystem. Now, the mode of those communications or the functions that enable those communications are quite different. And exactly how the subsystems communicate with each other is governed by interfaces and interface standards. And so, again, the mobile station communicates with a base station over an air radio interface. The base station communicates back to the BSC over another interface, and so on back through the system. And again, each of these interfaces is specified with according to what communication, what signaling can occur at sort of between and defines what signaling can occur between any subsystems. Okay. And so, again, the UM interface
governs, you know, defines how the mobile station can communicate with the base station. A BIS interface then defines how the base station communicates with the base station controller. And so the signals about channel distribution, connections, channel coding and decoding, message encryption, power control, etc. The A interface then is between the base station controller and the mobile switching center. And the E interface would be used to arrange handovers between different MSCs, and the C interface again is used to connect to the sort of arrange connection to the telephony network. So again, it's not that important that you know exactly which interface does what. The message is just that you do have to define exactly what communication is allowed between any two components of the system. Okay. So, just taking a little bit more detailed look at what the components of the system do. The base station system, subsystem, is responsible for connecting our mobile station to the mobile switching center, and it has two main components. It has the base station controller and the base transceiver station, or the base stations. Okay, so the base transceiver station is what actually implements the physical communication between the phone, the mobile station, and the system. So it actually receives the signals, receives and transmits signals to the mobile station. And so, again, it's responsible for the basic signal transmission, signal reception, and sort of simple control functions, and GSM-specific coding and data rate adaptation. Okay, so it sets up the communication link. So it sends and receives data. Okay. And there's, again, one base station per cell. Then, so we have a number of cells with base stations which are controlled by a base station controller. And this is providing the link between the base transceiver stations and the MSC. Okay. And so it provides the control functions and the physical link. It can be responsible for handover, sort of within cells, if within its sort of within its range. How it determines how the cells are configured, and the radio frequencies at which the base transceivers operate. Okay, so you get a signal from the mobile station that's relayed back to the base station controller and then relayed back into the MSC. Okay. Now, the switching subsystem is responsible for sort of controlling the base station subsystems, and also for relaying the signals back into the sort of back-end network.
Okay.
And so the core element in the switching subsystem is the MSC, so the mobile station controller. And it is responsible for setting up calls and maintaining connections, managing the resources, so managing the channels, call handover, so if you have to, say sort of, again, if you move from one base station controller to another, or sorry, from one MSC to another, or one MSC to another, it arranges that. Encryption of user data, interfaces with the external network, and it sort of allocates channel allocation.
So it essentially, it handles the connections. Okay. Now,
an issue that's present in mobile systems, which is not as significant for wired systems, is security and authentication of users. And so there are a number of components that deal with tracking information about users.
Okay.
The first is the home location register, and this stores permanent information about subscribers. So authentication, so all whatever information is necessary to establish a connection with the user, and sort of more permanent information like service profiles. And also some information about current location of the users. Okay. So anything that we need to know on a permanent basis about the user. Now, as the user moves, we still want to track information about them locally. So the visitor location register stores temporary information about the subscriber that's needed by the MSC, sort of, again, in the area, in the location where the user is at the moment. Okay. And then the authentication center stores information that's needed to verify user identity and ensure security. And the equipment identification register stores equipment information about the equipment identity and can prevent, sort of block the usage of stolen or unauthorized equipment. So when a user or tries to connect with the network, then they have to go through an authentication procedure. And again, the network is going to track their progress as they move from one region to another. And additionally, if somebody is looking for that user, then information about where exactly they are is stored in the home location register and the visitor location register. Okay, and so finally, So we've got this, we've got the connectivity, and we then want to sort of allow that, sort of to move from just the connection to the network to that connection sort of being to other individuals. And so that is handled by, again, a number of subsystems. We have the Gateway Mobile Services Switching Center and the GSM Interworking Unit that are going to provide interfaces to telephony, and data networks. Okay. And additionally, you have a message center, which provides voice, fax, and data messaging, and a mobile service node, which handles intelligent network services. So, again, we have connectivity from our mobile user to the base station, and through the base station controller to the mobile switching center, and from the mobile switching center again into a data or a telephony network. Okay, so the operation maintenance center supervises and maintains the operations within the network so that those traffic monitoring and reporting, management in case of failures, management of the home location register, billing, etc. Okay, so we had looked at our sort of abstract example of how a connection is made to the network last lecture, and we can now have a look at how that works for GSM. Okay, and even when a call is going on, the network still tracks the user. Okay. And so the SIM, subscriber identity module card, stores a service subscriber key called an IMSI, which identifies who the subscriber is, so allows sort of the network to validate or verify who the user is. Okay, and then the home location register stores a SIM record associated with that user, including device location and subscriber services. When the phone's turned on, well, it tries to locate a base station to make contact with. And when it is connected to a base station, the information about the location of the phone is tracked in the visitor location register. And the visitor location register communicates with the home location register to, again, indicate that it is, what the current location of the user is. Okay. And the VLR then gets a copy of the SIM record and stores the BTS location for the purposes of paging. Okay, so as another example, we have call routing to trying to make a mobile phone call to another well, tried to make a call to a mobile phone. And so, if we're coming into the network, then the call is, the request is routed to the GMSC, and the GMSC queries the home location register to find, if any, the visitor location register, and also the home location register will know what the status of the phone is, whether it should be diverted to another number, in which case it can return that information. Whether it's not on, it can return that information. If it can find a VLR, then it requests a temporary number, which is used by the GMSC to allow routing to the phones visiting MSC. The visiting MSC then gets the phone record, including the location of the BSC, and pages then all the base stations within that BSC's control to find the callee. And so the phone can then respond, as we saw before, and through the BSC to the MSC, and at that point a connection can be made, sort of again from our phone network all the way through to the phone, which will ring, and if it's answered, a speech path is going to be created through the MSC back to the gateway MSC and then into the network. Okay. And finally, if you want to make a call, it's sort of the reverse. The mobile station signals its request to the base station. The base station will then relay that request to the MSC. The MSC authenticates the user, so checks that they're authorized to make the phone call. When the user is authenticated and the connection is established to the MSC, the called number is forwarded to the MSC. The MSC relays that to the GMSC, which relays that again into the phone network, and then that's it's assuming that, again, at the opposite end, somebody acknowledges the call, then the voice connection is established again from end to end. Okay. So, there's a number of complications in that procedure. We're only going to look at a few of them, three of them to be specific. We are going to look at channel structure, and this refers to the radio link established between the mobile station and the base transceiver station, and we're essentially going to look at how the resources are allocated. So how do you know what signal is happening at any time on any frequency? Okay, and as you might guess, it's not completely simple. Okay. We'll then look at other details of the radio transmission system, so how are signals encoded, etc. And finally, we'll look at sort of some call control features. Okay, so what has to happen in order to sort of connect the call end-to-end? And so again, at the radio link level, we have to allocate resources.
We also have to manage mobility, track the mobility of the user, and we have to manage connectivity. So if we set up a connection, we have to manage that connection. Well, we have to set it up first and then manage it. So we'll look at how that's done. Okay, so we'll wrap up this lecture just looking at the first of these aspects, which is channels. And GSMA uses both time division multiple access and frequency division multiple access. So the frequency spectrum that's allocated to GSM is divided up into channels, and then each channel is paired. Okay, so you have an uplink channel and a downlink channel. Okay. So frequency division duplexing is used, which says a separate frequency band is used for the uplink and the downlink channels. So uplink are in one range and downlink are in another range. Okay. So the uplink and the downlink bands can each be divided into 124 different intervals. Okay. And so that gives you sort of a frequency division for the system. Additionally, time division multiple access is used. So for each frequency carrier, time slots are introduced. Times divided into 8 slots. Okay. And multiple access then occurs by assigning a carrier frequency and a time slot to a user. Okay. And if that was all that was going on, then we could stop the lecture now. Unfortunately, these time slot frequency combinations need to be used for multiple purposes. They need to be used for the user connection, so the user can transmit voice or whatever other data, but also these same frequencies need to be used for control to set up and maintain the connectivity. Okay. So a physical channel is a combination of a time slot and a carrier frequency. And physical channels are paired, so you have an uplink and a downlink. Their frequencies are offset by 45 megahertz, so you know the pairing by knowing the frequency offset. And then they're marked according to the time slot number. Okay, again, the
time slots between uplink and downlink direction are offset by 3, which means that the mobile station should never be transmitting and receiving at the same time, and that simplifies the technology a bit. Okay. So, for any carrier frequency, there are 8 physical channels, and then there are a number of carrier frequencies. Okay. The physical channels, again, are used not just to transmit speech and data, but also to transmit any control information that the network needs to maintain the connectivity. Okay. And for the purpose of efficiency, there's no single physical channel that only has one use. There's no single channel that's always control or always always the same type of control or always data. Okay. And so in order to manage these channels or to signify these channels, the combination of the message transmitted on a specific physical channel is called a logical channel. So a logical channel is a physical channel that's performing a certain function. So it can either transmit data or it could be transmitting a control signal. And that if it's transmitting data, that's one logical channel. If it's transmitting a control signal, that's another logical channel. Okay. Okay. So, again, you've got a number of carrier frequencies. For each carrier frequency, time is divided up into these 8 slot frames. And so at any point, the same slot can be fulfilling a different function. So in this example, in our first, if we look at time slot 5, our first time slot 5 is transmitting data. We'll get on to that later. Our second time slot 5 is transmitting data again. Our third time slot 5 is being used to transmit a control signal. So you have different logical channels then. In the first 2 cases, you've got a data transmission channel. In the third case, you've got a control channel, which again is transmitting a specific sort of control information. Okay. So, if we look at an example, again, if our mobile station wants to make a connection request, well, the first thing it has to do is find the base transceiver. It does that by looking at the 0 time slot for information that's transmitted on that time slot. So that's downlink information is always transmitted on this time slot. Okay. And so when it finds this, it knows then what the uplink, so it's found a specific frequency, it knows then what the uplink frequency is, and it can use the uplink frequency to transmit a request to set up a call. Okay. So then a series of logical channels are used to set up the calls. We'll look at that later. And sort of, again, depending on the size of the cell, the number of users and connections in the cell, more or less of the physical channels need to be allocated to transmit control information. Okay. So, there are four main types of logical channels in GSM. There's traffic channels, and they're what carries the speech or data. There are broadcast channels, and these are in the downlink direction only. And so this is information that the base transceiver sends out to control the mobile stations to let them know sort of how they can communicate, synchronize, etc. Okay. The common control channels are used for call setup. So you have channels that allow the mobile station, the base station, to negotiate a connection. And when that connection is established, well, as a part of the establishment of that connection, a dedicated control channel is set up. So common control channels can be used by anybody. The dedicated control channel is between the one mobile station and the base station. Okay, so traffic channels can be used to carry either speech or data, and they're transmitted at either full rate, which is 13 kilobits per second plus channel coding, which gives you 22.8 kilobit per second signals, or half rate, which allows you to transmit at half that rate. Okay. Now, in terms of sort of again, physical versus logical channel, control information is interleaved with the data traffic, and to accomplish this, we have our frames. A 26 frame multi-frame is defined, and so every 12th frame is used to transmit the control information. So you have 26 cycles. 25 of them you might be transmitting data, in one of them you're transmitting control information instead. Again, along the same time slot frequency combination. Okay. So, broadcast channels, again, are downlink channels which are used to sort of control the radio aspects of the system. And so they're always transmitted on time slot zero. This allows the mobile stations to know where to look for them and in the downlink direction. Okay, so from the base station to the mobile stations. And these are divided into sub-channels then. You have a frequency correction channel, which is transmitted every 10 frames and allows the mobile station to synchronize with the base station in terms of the frequency. Okay. You have a synchronization channel, which is every 10 frames, the frame after the frequency correction channel, and this allows for time synchronization within the system, so mobile stations can know where the time slots begin and end. Okay. And then the broadcast control channel is in frames 2 to 5, and that gives information about what the cell is, what the network is, what channel availability there is. So, in other words, information that the mobile stations need to know in order to sort of connect with the network at all. Okay, then we have our common control channels. And these are transmitted on the broadcast control channel frequency and time slot whenever the broadcast control channels are not happening. So in some frames you have a broadcast control channel, and in some frames you have a common control channel instead. And again, these are divided into sub-channels. We have a paging channel in the downlink direction for paging. We have a random access channel in the uplink direction, which allows a response for paging or a request for connectivity by a mobile station if it wants to make a call. We have an access granted channel in the downlink direction, which is a response to the access request and that's used for authorization purposes and resource allocation purposes. So, again, we have two sorts of logical channels that are using the same physical channel, that is the time slot 0 and whatever frequency you happen to be on. And again, to allow this to happen, the frames are arranged in 51-frame multi-frames. And the different channels are allocated based on the position within the multi-frame. Okay, so here we have our time slot and carrier frequency, and then we have a sequence of these time slot carrier frequencies, so 51 of them, and what we see is that in different, depending on where you are within this multi-frame, the physical channel, the time slot frequency, is used for different purposes. So, at the start, and every 10 frames, it's used for the frequency correction, and so that's the F, and following the F frame is the S, which is the synchronization. So that accounts for a certain, those pair account for a certain number of frames. Okay, and then at the start of the multi-frame, following the frequency and synchronization, we have a number of broadcast messages, the Bs, and then most of the remaining frames are used for channel control information. Okay. Now, on top of that, we have our sort of control, which is specific to a single connection. So all of those control messages were sort of general. And we also have control messages that are specific to a certain of the specific connection, so a specific mobile station that's, you know, sort of using the network. And so these are called dedicated control channels. And they can be on any time slot except time slot 0. Okay. And again, there are a number of functions, so they get subdivided into a number of sub-channels. We have standalone dedicated control functions, which are used to get the connection during the initial phase. You have slow associated control channels, which control the power, timing, and sort of power aspects of the connection. And your fast associated control channels, which are used for urgent messages. Okay. And so you share frames with the data connections. Okay. And so, again, if we look at our time slot, then we have our 51, for the control channels, we have a 52 frame multi-frame. It's 52 or 51. And so, depending on what your position is within the multi-frame, you are... Yeah, you have different different channels are different logical channels are in action. And so we have our dedicated control channels, D, and then our slow associated control channels, A. And what our slow associated control channels will cycle again through multiple multi-frames with in the next 52 frame cycle, instead of having A0 through A2, or sorry, A0 through A3, you'll have A4 through A7, and you'll cycle through all of those as well. Okay, so again, it's the allocation is a bit complicated. But you have a look at it, and again, I'm going to post a sort of more detailed reference for specifically this portion of the lecture shortly. Okay. So, we have the time division for GSM systems cannot be fully described just by the 8 slots and by frequency allocations.
Okay. But we have this additional idea of logical channels and so exactly what is transmitted within the system is governed by what sort of logical channel is in play at the moment and what is transmitted is referred to as a burst. And let me just skip ahead. What we'll see, what happens is that, again, depending on the type of logical channel, the burst structure differs. So we have five types of bursts. We have normal bursts, which carry data and signaling. We have FNS bursts for frequency correction and synchronization. We have access bursts for requesting access, and then we have a dummy burst just used as filler. And the format of those bursts is different, which is unsurprising because the function of those bursts is different. Okay. So at the lowest level, we have bursts, which is a time slot plus frequency carrier, and again, different, the transmission itself has a different characteristic depending on then the logical channels. The logical channels are defined through the frame and multi-frame structure, and so we call each the eight time slots a frame, and then within the frame, we collect together groups of frames into multi-frames. We have 26 frames in a multi-frame for data, and 51 in a multi-frame for control information. And depending on, again, where you are in the sequence of frames in the multi-frame, the physical channels are assigned different logical functions. Okay. And so in order to go through a complete cycle, we define a super frame, which is 51 by 26, so it's, it should be 50. If you go 51 times 26 frames, then you've completed a cycle for both the traffic and the control channels, so you're back where you started. On top of that, 2048 superframes are defined as a hyperframe. And so a hyperframe lasts for 3 hours and 28 minutes, roughly. And this is, and at the end of a hyperframe, the system clock returns to its initial state. And this is used for security, data encryption, and security purposes. Okay, so that's the structure overall. So you have enough superframes, you get a hyperframe, and the superframes are sequences of sort of control cycles and data cycles. And so within any superframe, you have multi-frames, again, for either data or control, and then, depending on where you are,
within the multiframe, you know what the function of that slot is. And that's okay, and so just that's the burst structure. Okay, so we've actually run out of time. So just as a little reminder, when we start up in 2 weeks, I'll go over the example of sort of exactly what channels are used when we're initiating a call setup. Now, next week is St. Patrick's Day, so we won't be having lectures. So enjoy yourselves, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.